Well, it makes perfectly good sense. Father's Day, up until recently, hasn't gotten any respect. It's been the little brother of Mother's Day. And Mother's Day got all the cards, all the flowers, all the attention, the breakfast, the brunches. And Dad was kind of an afterthought. It's always been strange to me when you see football games and you have these great big football players going, "Hi, Mom," where I always assume that they probably learn football more at their father's knee than mom's, but hey, these are strong bonds and the hard wiring on both fathers and mothers and of children. Well, Father's Day not only didn't get the respect that maybe fathers deserve, but it also didn't get bemoaned and bewailed for its crass commercialization. Whereas clergy could get up and scream about the commercialization of Mother's Day and the Hallmark Hall of Fame of Mother's Day and how it was a plot by the floral industry when it was actually a plot by some 19th century Unitarians, but that's another story. Today, the playing field has more than leveled. Today, Father's Day actually outstrips Mother's Day in terms of per capita spending. So I now have something to rail against, which is always a wonderful opportunity in the prophetic tradition. However, I have to admit to some ambivalence, since I like this stuff. And the reason that Father's Day caught up and passed Mother's Day in per capita spending is very clear. You can get Mom with some flowers and a brunch and a card, but who's going to give Dad flowers? Who's going to give Dad a really mushy card because you won't feel good about it, and he'll go, you know, "Aw, shucks," and stuff like that. I remember when my son Adam heard that his grandfather had a small stroke, and we were living in England. He calls up Grandpa and says at the end of the conversation, "Well, Grandpa, I love you." And he said he could hear over the telephone Grandpa going, okay. So uncomfortable with the feelings are men that it doesn't get expressed in cards and flowers. It gets expressed in power tools, in barbecue pits, in golf clubs, in shirts and sport coats and ties. So Dad's a much more expensive date on Father's Day. When I think about Father's Day, I of course think about my father and the gifts he gave me as opposed to the gifts that I gave him. And what's interesting to me is that the memories tend to be of peak experiences. And it's almost like I don't believe in what it is that I'm feeling, because I believe that life is manifest in every day, in the ordinary courtesies and kindnesses and love and consideration that we give each other on a day-to-day basis. But yet what I remember so strongly are the memories of those special times, the times that my father took me off to see an automobile race when he didn't really care about that, it was for me. Or the playing hooky from school in order to see the first Dodger game in the Coliseum, the first Angel game in Wrigley Field in Los Angeles, where he gave me permission to stay home to watch John Glenn take off for the first time in that rocket. It was those high points and moments that I personally treasure so much, as well as more characterological gifts. My dad really loved people. He was very funny, very vivacious, very social in ways that I'm not. I have my mother's sense of humor. And my brother got my father's sense of humor, which means that after he shakes your hand, you better count all of your fingers and make sure that I wear loafers just so shoelaces can't be tied together. That's the kind of humor Dad had, which I appreciated but didn't inherit, for which my wife is vaguely thankful. But he was a wonderful father, and I learned a lot about being in the world, and I learned a lot about from him about loving people, because he really enjoyed being with people. My mother was the politician on the Central Democratic Committee of California. My mother was the more intellectual of the two, and my father just enjoyed being with folks. And I think about my inheritance and what I got from both sides. And of course, then what in my part of the relay of life, what I took and handed off to my son and my sons and grandchildren. As many of you know, I was not here last week because I was up in Napa, marrying my son. And I know it's a funny locution because I've married my mother and I've married a couple of sisters-in-law and I know, and my wife is always getting upset with all the people I marry. But it was stranger and more wonderful and impactful for me to have the honor of performing my son's ceremony than I think any other that I have ever performed, including Mom. I mean, Mom was just so weird. It was, you know, dearly beloved and Mom. And then to ask, you know, do you take my mother to be your wife? You know, you have all of the Freudian issues going on in there, and it was a little distracting. But with my son, it was one of the great high points of my life. You can't help but remember the birth. You can't help but remember all of the tremendously immature things that he did while growing up last year. And the tremendous distance that we have all traveled together. You can't help but have all of the tunes and words of sunrise, sunset, as you mark not the magic act of a wedding ceremony, but the milestone. It helped celebrate this that it was in a beautiful place up in Napa Valley, up in the mountains, that the weather absolutely cooperated. I wish that I could take responsibility for it. That you had cool and foggy mornings that burned off into medium heat with just a painterly wisp of fog on the mountain peaks, surrounded by wine vines, climbing up hills. It was a magical setting, and it was a magical setting which Adam, my son, structured so that families would become family. He structured a three-day event. He sent a bunch of other people the bills for it, but he structured a three-day event so that the Dobers, the Snyders, the Pakes, the Kims, the McCackens, the Mungers, all of these families would become a family, that we would be together sharing the customs and traditions from his bride's side of the family, which was largely Korean, to the various forms of the groom side of the family and his step siblings. And it all worked. It all worked as people mixed and matched, not by ethnicity, not by religious tradition, not even by age, but people moved around and sat at tables, and families did become family, the human family. The human family where we, in fact, felt and became enriched by all of the wonderful differences that make life interesting, that make it worthwhile to meet other people, to bring other people into our worlds and into our families, to learn from them. So we had the great joy of watching this Western caterer trying to do bulgogi, which is the Korean short ribs. The Korean side of the family didn't have enough trust in the caterer to do the kimchi, so Dr. Paik made her own kimchi, and that was fine. I like to cry when I'm eating. We do like spicy food. We just had this wonderful blending and enriching from the various spices and flavors of life, of the things that are surface differences, but underneath are just human. There was a Korean ceremony at 11 o'clock on Saturday, a couple of hours before my Junitarian Buddhaversalist ceremony. And in the Korean ceremony, it was all so familiar. It was kind of fun because the bride, Soo Yun's brother, narrated it. I'm not sure you could say performed it because it's an engagement ceremony where the groom and the bride come into the bride's house and ask permission and offer wine and go through a ritual. And seeing my son in the Korean traditional costume was really a kick. And seeing Soo Yun and their happiness was just wonderful. And then they come to the groom's house, and Adam's mother and I sat together as they came in and bowed. That's a moment I won't soon forget, having my son bow to me. You know, there's a lot we can learn from other traditions. And he managed not to have that look of irony he so often has during the ceremony. And then they offered us wine, something that is really quite universal, food and wine and family. That's what wedding ceremonies across every ethnic group are about. And then another interesting and universal custom, the parents of the groom take fruit and throw it into the apron of the bride. Now, it does not take Freud or Jung to figure out why it is that we are throwing the fruit at the lap of the bride. It's kind of interesting that most of us, and this is a Korean custom, and it's kind of interesting that most of us associate rice with Asia, but Westerners throw rice. In Asia, they throw fruit. Gently. You're not supposed to exorcise your demons or throw with great force. It was wonderful. It was just wonderful. And then the wedding ceremony that I performed was out on in a meadow. And I think one of the great moments for me was to stand next to my son and watch him watch his bride walking across this grassy meadow in her wedding dress, and to see his excitement, his joy, his complete innocent, just unspeakable wow of that moment. And it was just a great blessing to be standing next to that kind of innocent happiness and joy. And it's a look that I see in grandson Nathan's face, who coincidentally, if you believe in coincidence, was 1 year old on Adam's wedding day. And for those of you who don't know, Nathan is the child of another son, so we were going in right order in terms of benefit of clergy. But there was an innocence and a joy in that look that is just a wonderful and nourishing reminder of the kind of joy that we have when we connect in family and as family, when we connect from generation to generation. Whether we are parents or not parents, when we work with the children in the religious education program, when I go and play and wrestle with and tease and can still sing to my grandchildren, and I'm reconnected to this miracle of life, this love becoming, the word love becoming incarnated in new human beings and in new hope and in new chances for all of us to remember the love that we have to give. And that was really quite remarkable. And it reminded me of what I get when I am watching and playing with and changing my grandchildren and watching them change before my laughing and weepy eyes. The whole sense of continuity that we are not alone. We're not alone in time. We are part of those who came before, our parents, our grandparents. We are not alone in this moment. We are part of a future of children, of grandchildren, whether they are biologically our own. They are made our own when we give them our time, when we give them our attention, when we give them our love. And that connects us to a story that is endless. You don't need a particular theology. You don't need a particular mysticism in order to get that we are not alone and isolated in our brief lives. We are part of a great story and connected to that story by the love we receive, by the repairs that we make for the love that we haven't received, and from the love that we give to each other, to the memory of our parents, and most importantly of all, to those who follow us, literally and figuratively. We are reminded of how great a difference we can make in this world. We are all important to each other and to tomorrow.